Moncrief on News Talk.
The Guardian recently conducted a poll among authors, critics and academics to compile a list of the greatest English language novels of all time. The top five are In Search of Lost Time by Proust, To the Lighthouse by Virginia Woolf, Ulysses by James Joyce, Beloved by Toni Morrison, and in the number one spot, George Eliot's doorstopper of a book, Middlemarch. Adele Coffey, whose latest book is called In Glass Houses, is here to tell us how wrong the voters were. Good afternoon, Adele.
Am I really? Well, yes. I mean, my book didn't even appear in the top 100, Sean.
Oh, my. Well, that's outraged. There you go. You were right. That's politics, Adele. That's all. It's who you know. That's what's going on there.
Oh,
now,
absolutely.
I mean, given that it's these things, even amongst the august voters, and it was quite an august list of voters, these things are always highly subjective anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And look, these lists come around every year, like with the changing of the seasons. It's so predictable. And Middlemarch actually is regularly in the number one spot for good reason. But my whole point on this is like, can you actually ever say what is the best novel of all time? Because novels are such a subjective and personal pleasure. We read them, we love our favourites, and we love them because they are a prism through which we can see ourselves. And so everybody's experience is individual. You might read an amazing novel, Sean, and say it's your favourite novel. I might read it equally and say, this says nothing to me about my life.
Yeah.
To coin a certain singer.
Well, I suppose that's the thing. Could you say Middlemarch isn't necessarily the best novel of all time, but maybe the best novel for its time?
Oh, absolutely. And I do think it's one of the best novels of all time. And one of the reasons I think it persists, and one of the reasons, should we tell people what it's about first?
Yeah, do.
Because, people might not have read it. It is 900 pages long. So it is quite an undertaking if you do want to read it. Most people kind of read it in their English courses if they do an English degree or something like that, because it's kind of one of those ones that it's like Ulysses in that way. You know, you are either made read it or you don't approach it unless like somebody is standing over you, making you do it. But it is, it's about a town called Middlemarch, and there's a huge cast of people, but the main characters in the novel are Dorothea Brooke, who is this kind of very intelligent, earnest woman who marries this much older man called Edward Casaubon, and it's a disastrous marriage. Now, there's another couple, Tertius Lydgate, who is a doctor, and he's a very ambitious, very intelligent man as well, but he's poor, and he marries this kind of shallow, silly social climber of a woman called Rosamund Vincey, and their marriage is also a disaster. So it's kind of it's such a huge novel. It goes through all of British class. It's set kind of in the 1840s, which is about 40 years before George Eliot wrote it. So it's taking on this time of huge change in British history. So it was like there was electoral reform, there was the arrival of the railroads, there was, you know, scientific breakthroughs that were causing people to question religion. And it was a huge time of upheaval. And really what a lot of people seem, the consensus on this novel seems to be that it is Eliot saying, you know, how does a person live in this kind of world with this kind of upheaval and find some meaning in their life when everything seems meaningless? And you can kind of see how that would appeal to modern readers, Sean, can't you? Because we are going through similar turbulence. We've got war. We've got technological. We're in a technological revolution. You know, we know so much about science and medicine and our human body, our genome. And yet, you know, religion is still there as a question. So you can see why it appeals all these years later. But it's been described as a very, very intelligent soap opera, which is a good way of putting it, because there's such a huge cast. If you like Charles Dickens, you'll really enjoy this.
Yeah.
Eliot had this huge understanding of human psychology. And I think that's what appeals about it as well. It's like this kind of, again, what I was saying at the start, you can see yourself in it in a way. And there's a BBC journalist put it very well. He said, you know, if you read this novel and if you really listen to George Eliot, you'll find out things about yourself that you didn't know and maybe don't even want to know.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Yeah, well, and also for the time, it was kind of subverting because there were a lot of books written by female authors. Now, obviously, yeah. Eliot was writing under a man's name, but she was kind of subverting that trope to a degree about looking for love and making a good marriage.
Well,
and all
she
that stuff.
Really was. And this is why it came to be known as one of the kind of great realist novels, because she really subverted that marriage plot trope, which was so popular then and still is so popular now, where, you know, the book is all about, it's always leading up to marriage and the book ends at the marriage and we don't find out what happens afterwards. But she was really starting with the marriages and she spends the whole book watching what happens in these marriages and she's looking at, you know, the reality of these marriages and the disappointment involved and the difficulties and how they're kind of, they're almost ruinous for both of these people. So she was really subverting that. And she didn't have a lot of time for, like she greatly admired a lot of female novelists, but she also didn't have a lot of time for the kind of lighter stuff. She wrote an essay called Silly Novels by Lady Novelists. So you can
subtle.
Kind of guess where that one went. Yeah, very subtle. But so she that was one of the reasons actually that she changed her name to a man's name. Like that's why she used a pseudonym. One was she wanted to kind of borrow the authority. Now, we are talking about different times, Sean. You know, she wanted to borrow that male authority that was automatically given to male writers and authors. And she wanted to distance herself from those sort of silly lady novelists, as she referred to them. Mm. But also, she had worked as a journalist and a kind of researcher. She was a huge intellectual. And she had a career and she wanted to sort of protect that name from any damage. It was basically damage limitation. In case the novels weren't well received, she wanted to be able to continue working as a journalist without any reputational damage. But obviously, you know, in the time you had the Brontes, they all wrote under male pseudonyms as well, because it just, women weren't obviously treated in the same way. They weren't given the same sort of critical reception as male authors were.
Yeah. Someone's texting to say Middlemarch is fabulous on audiobook.
Yes, 32 hours long, Jean, 32 hours. It'll keep you going.
Now, and I suppose that's the thing for, because even I suppose compared to a lot of contemporary novels, that Middlemarch and novels from that period, you know, they're bigger, they have the kind of War and Peace kind of, and so they take their time.
Oh, they really take their time.
And to the modern mind, that can be difficult to adjust to.
It's almost impossible to adjust to, I think, more and more for the modern mind, because how novels are written now, it's like a kind of a competitive sport. I see it even in my own novels. You know, you start by like, you're trying to entrap the reader almost. Mm. You start with this like huge hook and it's like, get them in. And then you have to try and have a kind of cliffhanger on the end of every chapter. And it's getting more and more so like that. Whereas these books, there was no television, there was no mobile phones, there was no social media. You didn't have to compete for a reader's attention that way. And the pleasure to be had was in that very slow, immersive experience. And I do have to say, and I do have to recommend, if you can take the time to read these books and if you can commit to them, they are hugely rewarding, difficult pleasure. And, you know, you can't expect to sit down and say, I'll just read two pages of Middlemarch now before bed and expect to be affected in any way by it. You need to put aside an hour at a time, you know, because in that hour, nothing much will have happened, and you'll have to kind of absorb and reflect. The sentences are long, there's sub clauses, the language is different. You know, we're talking about the 1850s. Mm. You have to kind of, I was watching Lena Dunham there on Instagram the other day. She was referring to, you know, having to get used to ye oldie English, which is kind of what is used here. It's a different way of speaking. But as with Dickens, it's very, very rewarding. And you live and breathe these characters, and because they take the time to go into the characters, you get to know them so much better than these kind of, you know, half sketched characters that we get nowadays in these really quick reads. You know, like if you look at the average audiobook, it'll take between 8 and 12 hours. Middlemarch, 32 hours.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
But you do just have to put your phone away if you want to read Middlemarch. Yeah. If you want to read The Brothers Karamazov, like, you have to put the phone down. That would be my number one recommendation for getting through a long book. And then you also have to give it a bit of time, give it an hour a day, and just set a schedule. And if you're balking at that schedule, have a look at your screen time for the last week and see how many hours a day it comes in at. And it won't seem like too much of a sacrifice to give an hour a day to reading. I sound like a teacher now, don't I? I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, eat your greens and read your books.
Indeed.
It's very good for you.
Adele, thanks a million. As ever, that was Adele Coffey there. Her latest novel is called In Glass Houses. It will hook you immediately.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.